Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Cipollo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubcipollo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Tonight's guest, Mr. Deck Ingram, here on the set of Turn of the Screw at the New Hazlett Theater, produced by Prime Stage. Tell us about this play.
This play is from one of the best ghost stories ever written. It's from the classic Henry James novel.
Oh, I was going to say Ghost and Mr. Chicken, which I am a little partial to, you know. But...
Well, we're no Don Knotts here, but it's a good story.
Please continue.
It's the story of the governess. She is a nameless character known only as the governess throughout the entire book. She's the classic unreliable narrator throughout the entire thing. She is hired by the mysterious Victorian gentleman to take care of his niece and nephew who were orphaned by the death of their parents. And she goes out into the bleak English countryside moves in and falls in love with the children, but there's clearly something very, very wrong in this house. And throughout the course of the story, you learn that there was a couple before the governess who lived there before, along with Peter Quint, who was the groundskeeper, and they had an illicit love affair, and it deeply affected the children. So at this point, the question becomes, are there ghosts actually haunting the house, or is the governess losing her mind? And Henry James does not answer that question, and neither does this production. And it's something that has been debated for 100 years at this point, and you have scholars on both sides who are absolutely rabid about their particular decision on that.
So it is a ghost story.
It is, or maybe it's not. Maybe it's a story of a woman falling into psychosis.
Psychological thriller?
Indeed. Thrilling. It is indeed.
Yeah. Love story?
Not in the traditional sense. You definitely have the forbidden love of Peter Quint and Miss Jessup, who was the former governess, but that's all stuff that happened in the past. There's also sort of an attraction of the governess to the Victorian gentleman who hires her, and there's a lot of sexual repression and tension there.
Is that where we kind of get this title, Turn of the Screw?
That's not totally off. It's also ratcheting up the tension throughout, because once this thing starts, it's just like a freight train, and things just happen and happen and happen, and the tension never lets up through the entire thing. It's a heck of a ride.
Wow. So about this production in particular, I mean, the show's been done a lot. Places over many years.
Different versions.
So what is unique about this particular production here at Prime Stage?
What I love about this script is Jeffrey Hatcher is the playwright, and he has boiled it down to its absolute essential elements. And it's already a very spare story to begin with. The novella is... it's like 90 pages long, so it's incredibly compact as it is, and he's taken that one step further. It's an incredibly minimalist piece. It's acted by just two actors, the woman playing the governess is the governess throughout, and the actor portraying the man, as he's shown in the script, portrays all of the other characters, including the little boy and the housekeeper.
So is this an adaptation done specifically for Prime Stage?
Not specifically for Prime
Stage.
So
this particular script had been done before?
Yes, it has been done before.
Has it always been just two actors?
It's written for two actors. It's actually been expanded to include a chorus of characters and that sort of thing too. But it really is written to be two people. And when I say minimalist, I mean minimalist. There are no sound cues throughout the show.
But the staircase is lovely.
Oh, the staircase is beautiful. This entire set is incredible.
Yeah. I'm gonna move in, you know. I'm thinking where would I hang things. But
even the sound effects are created by the actors on stage. So it's a very theatrical piece. And really the whole thing takes place sort of inside the governess's mind. It's a story within a story. Mm. You're met by a character who is telling this story at a Christmas gathering. And so you're getting, this is multiple times removed from the actual action. So again, that's what's factual, what's not. It's like a game of telephone.
Old story. What's the time period that this is set in?
It's not really set in a specific time period, but it has a lot of Victorian sensibilities.
Mm. Well, you know, I hear governess, and I'm thinking of all those stuffy old horror movies, like The Haunting. Yeah. There's always some grim governess that's like, don't go there at night. You know?
Right.
So that's where my mind goes immediately.
And a lot of like the Hammer horror stuff that you had in the 60s and the 70s, that's very much in this tradition. It grows out of the Gothic tradition. Hmm. That's much, much older. And this is one of the first moves into the more modern Gothic fiction. It's really an incredible piece. One of the main important pieces of Turn of the Screw is it's the first appearance of the bad seed, really, the idea of the evil child. You didn't really see that
before. Oh, not Patty McCormick herself.
No, no.
My ticket's bought.
Right. But that grew directly out of this tradition.
Wow.
The Children's Hour, that also came directly from this.
Creepy children.
Yeah, this is the first time you see it.
Children of the Corn.
Exactly.
There's another one.
So why it was so groundbreaking and really scary, because children are supposed to be the innocent. In fact, the best film adaptation of this that was, made by Truman Capote. He did the script.
Really?
It's called The Innocents, and it's incredible.
I did not know that.
Indeed.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. There's also a terrible prequel with Brando called The Nightcomers.
What?
Pass on. Well,
how
see
did
it,
I,
but
it's
how awful.
Did I not know this? No, listen, I love bad movies.
Oh.
You know, the campier, the more absurd, the better.
And yeah.
The fact that I don't know about that really makes me want to go see it.
Yeah, well, it's bad. It's it really takes that 70s ooh icky sex thing to the extreme.
Now, was this like young Brando, or was this kind of like older Dr. Moreau?
This is not Dr. Moreau, Brando. Oh God, no. You get some gratuitous Brando shirtless, so it's worth a watch for that.
We'll table that until the Berg Vivant Film Society can review this properly and get back to you with its findings.
Mm-hmm.
So who are our actors? And don't tell me Brando.
No, unfortunately. We have Lissa Brennan, who is playing the governess, and she is just a brilliant local actor. People have seen her from Pittsburgh Irish and Classical to Quantum Theater. She's been all over the place, and she's fantastic, and I can't wait to see her in this. And we also have George Saulnier playing the man and multiple characters, and that's going to be a heck of a challenge, and I can't wait to see what he does with it.
Yeah. absolutely. Mm-hmm. Directed by Joe Warwick.
Joe Warwick, yes.
Now, has he put any special director's touches on this?
I haven't got to actually see it yet, okay. So I'm going to be surprised with everybody else
out there. But Joe has certainly directed plenty around Pittsburgh.
A lot of tremendous
productions. Mm-hmm.
And lots of off-Broadway and even a few Broadway credits there, too.
Wow.
So it's going to be quite
good.
A treat.
Indeed, indeed. And again, the set is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. John Michael Beauchamp. Fantastic. The design team here at Prime Stage is just top notch.
Everything
they do is incredible.
So the show runs. It's running now.
Yep, it is running now, and it runs through November 10th. It's at the New Hazlett Theater, and we can find tickets at primestage.org.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Now, after the spirits are all gone and the staircase is removed to my home, where I'll be enjoying it. What's next for Prime Stage?
They have a 3-show season. The next show after this one is The Importance of Being Earnest, which is going to be fantastic. And the end of the season is a really exciting show called The Devil's Arithmetic, which is a new adaptation for Prime Stage Theater that's going to feature a lot of heavy theatricality with some puppetry, and it deals with the Holocaust. It's from the Newbery Award-winning book. It's going to be just tremendous.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, we have added a reading series this year, which I have the pleasure to direct for Prime Stage. And the first of those is going to be right here on the Turn of the Screw set on November 8th.
Fantastic.
We are doing a series of ghost stories and horror stories from some of the masters, including Poe, Lovecraft, and a piece from Yeats, which is going to be cool. And we are using some of Pittsburgh's horror icons to do those readings. We have Mark Tierno, who was in Romero's The Night Riders and Day of the Dead. We have Adrian Fisher, who has been in such incredible films as It's My Party and I'll Die If I Want To and Pro Wrestlers versus Zombies.
What a great resume.
Yeah. So it's going to be just an incredible evening.
Great. So the tie-in there, with Turn of the Screw doing something a little, haunted or a little creepy.
Right.
Is that going to kind of be the method for the rest of the readings to kind of, give a nod to the show that's up at the time?
Or? The others are actually outside of the regular season, and we're going to use those to mark some important dates, actually, that are happening this year. Ghost Stories actually coincides with the 45th anniversary of Night of the Living Dead, which is why we wanted to use Romero Alone's, which is going to be very cool. Also this year, not quite as a fun anniversary, we're marking the 50th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. So we're going to be doing a reading of his famous speeches and some sort of recollection and conversation about how he affected and how people were affected when they received that news. And that's going to be on the actual anniversary of his death on November 22nd.
Now let me ask you about that. As the man who will be directing these, how do you approach directing something like Kennedy's speech like that on such a monumental holiday or date, I should say?
It's going to be a challenge. I'm still sort of working that out as I go, because this is totally separate from anything that I've ever done. I've usually come in and, I have a set script and I have sort of a production history of it and can go back and look at that. With this, I think we're really going to treat it the same way that I treat a script, and we're not going to necessarily watch his speeches, and we're certainly not going to try to mimic. It's going to be finding the truth in there and bringing the actor's point of view to it as well.
Hmm. Very good. Mm-hmm. So, and I would suppose it'd be a very different approach than for how you're approaching the horror stories or ghost stories.
Right.
And what were the actual ones next week again that are going on the Turn of the Screw set?
On the Turn of the Screw set, there's a variety of them, actually. Okay. We've got some poetry from Poe. We have The Telltale Heart, of course. We have The Outsider from Lovecraft. It's
this set is perfect for Poe.
Oh yeah, it's going to be
like
just
this
incredible.
Is kind of how this is actually how I've always pictured mm-hmm. that Telltale Heart yeah. house looking yeah. exactly like this. And now that I've made that connection, yeah, kind of creepy.
And we are so lucky; we have David Crawford actually playing
Get
Edgar Allan Poe for us. Yeah, he has a brilliant one man Edgar Allan Poe play that he's toured all over the world.
I would love to see that because mm-hmm. he would be excellent, and I'm sure that he is.
Yeah,
but I need to see that.
Yes, he's going to be just brilliant.
And you're bringing them all together here for a heck of a lineup of readings. That's fantastic. Wow. So, you know, we're talking about ghosts and, you know, horror stories and things. You know, what's your favorite creepy story, ghost story, horror movie, horror play?
You know, Dawn of the Dead is my favorite horror movie.
And you're not just saying that because you're a Pittsburgher.
No, before I moved to Pittsburgh, when I was sort of checking out the city before moving here, one of my first stops was the Monroeville Mall because I had to see where
it
was filmed.
Wow, you are dedicated. Okay.
I love that movie.
All right, you earned it.
It's such a perfect blend of, you know, apocalypse and horror and human interaction and social commentary. It's just an amazing piece.
Now, are you into this whole modern zombie craze with like Walking Dead and things, or are you sort of a purist? You're like more, you know, the old school,
you know,
the Romero zombies.
Romero's the king of zombies. Yeah, I like the new stuff. The new stuff is good too, but nothing beats the original.
What is it with Pittsburgh and zombies?
I don't know.
I mean, I know that they're filmed here. You know, that's how a lot of us feel before we have our coffee in the morning. But it's, you know, I love this city because it's just known for some really weird mm-hmm. things. I mean, we've got a 40-foot duck. We've got zombies. Yep. We've got pierogies that run around. It's just fantastic.
Yep. Well, in some ways, we're the zombie city coming back from the death of the steel industry, if you want to get really meta about it.
That is meta. That's actually kind of brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Yeah, we've come a long way. I always like to say that, you know, 40 years ago, theater downtown was still in black and white in some places. And mm-hmm. if you went to a bar downtown after a show and asked for a martini, some guy from Bloomfield stood up.
Right.
So we have really, really come a long way. And I don't mind that, you know, 40-foot ducks and zombies mm-hmm. are carrying that, you know.
It's fun.
And, I mean, this theater alone over the years has just put on some incredible, I mean, Broadway yeah. quality shows.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Prime Stage 2, for that matter. I mean, you
yeah.
mentioned the production values,
mm-hmm.
and that's huge. I mean, every show that I have seen at Prime Stage, it's not just dramatic, they're almost cinematic.
Yes, yes.
You know, and I mean that as a compliment, because mm-hmm. in some respects it could be taken maybe the other way.
Yeah.
But just with those production values and that attention to detail and the way that I think Prime Stage likes to produce a story.
Mm-hmm. Well, the story is above all. Wayne really emphasizes story over all of this production value stuff, because if you don't have a story, you can have the most beautiful set in the world and it doesn't matter. But I'm being a newbie here to the Prime Stage family. It's been a really cool discovery process for me because I, like way too many people out there, assumed that Prime Stage was a children's theater and didn't have anything for me. And that comes from the work that they do with a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of school matinees, and that's part of the mission, that their literature come to life and that sort of thing. So when I finally got myself down here to see a show, I was just blown away by the quality and just the way that it doesn't talk down to the young people that it's serving. And it's young people friendly. It's not specifically for young people. It's and it's just great, great work. Consistently some of the best in Pittsburgh.
Do you think, you know, as a director, that you really, you kind of have to adjust when directing for an audience that might not necessarily be targeted toward, or show them, might not necessarily be targeted to young people, but that they would certainly be encouraged to see? I guess a lot of that might happen in picking the show.
A lot of that happens there.
But I guess, my thought is that, you know, as a director, a lot of times you kind of have to really put yourself maybe in the audience's position, and that might dictate how you play your cards?
Probably the best lesson I've ever learned as a director over the years is never underestimate your audience. They get it. And Prime Stage is really good at helping the audience get it, because when you have student matinees, they have an education director in-house who creates packets of information that go out to the teachers. So they're coming in with some knowledge of what they're going to be seeing.
And see, I mean, when I was in school, I would have loved to have gone seen, you know, some of these shows. I actually heard somebody told me that their school went on a field trip when she was little. Their school went on a field trip to actually see a group of prisoners at a prison do a performance of No, No, Nanette. Now picture that, okay? And it was an all-male prison.
Oh, wow.
But they had to pick, like, a show that had subject matter that wouldn't, like, get anybody aggressive or anything. Right. So this prison is doing No, No, Nanette. And she actually says that that's what inspired her to get into the dramatic arts. Not because it was necessarily good, but, I'm just picturing these diesel guys. So that kind of is, that story inspired me, you know, I think it'd be hilarious to start doing intentionally, you know, bad theater, bad movies. In fact, you know, I would never start a theater company in this town because there's so many great ones. But if I were to start a theater company in Pittsburgh, it would be to do things that were in intentional poor taste, in such poor taste that it was actually almost pop art, which is something that Pittsburgh is known for. I want to do a production of Grease cast entirely with people over 75 years old and change nothing except the casting. And the more walkers and canes, the better. But just do that as the casting. Things like that.
I love that idea.
Do you think I should talk to Wayne Brenda about this?
You never know.
Hey, kids can come see it.
Absolutely. It's,
you know, teaches a lot about the geriatric healthcare system.
To watch Grease Lightning, though.
You know, we did Grease in high school. Right. And, of course, they changed the lyrics to it. And, in fact, I never knew that the real lyrics.
Most people don't.
Until... Yeah. You know, years later, when maybe I, you know, heard it on the album or something like that. You know, I know theater people, so I go to any party usually, and they've got show tunes playing. And I was like, how did I miss that in high school? You know, it's like, they had to have edited it out. So what, where did you get your start then in the dramatic arts? What was your first directing project, or what kind of first compelled you to get into the director's seat?
Well, you know, I took a circuitous route here, as many do. My high school really didn't have any sort of theatrical department and of any kind. I was my artistic outlet there was marching band. I was lucky that it was an excellent marching band.
What did you play?
Saxophone,
trombone, and I was terrible. I was so bad. I was in that high school marching band for 3 years. I can't read music. I still can't read music. Yeah. But, you know, with a trombone, you kind of just slide it around until you get there. You kind of look what everybody else is doing. So somehow I survived in band for 3 years. And then I finally just, you know, faced the music, so to speak, and said, not for me. But
Well, for me, music was a possibility as a career going forward.
Really? So you were good.
I was all right.
You're better than I was. I can tell you that right now. I mean, if you could read a note and play it, you got me beat.
Yep. But I ultimately decided that as the first person in my family to go to college, that maybe I should do something respectable. So I decided to become a lawyer.
Oh.
obviously that didn't
take. You went into the dramatic arts?
What? I went to Marietta College, which is a liberal arts school, so you have to take an arts elective, and looking through the different things available, acting 101 was one of them. And I thought, you know, acting, public speaking, this works together. So I took the class, and I had just an incredible instructor in Steve Rader, who after much coaxing, finally got me to audition for a show, and I did it and fell in love with it. The first role I ever had was the romantic lead in Molière's The Learned Ladies, which is all in rhymed couplets. So if you're going to start somewhere, start there. It only gets easier.
Ah, that's a good way to put it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I struggled back and forth. I kept saying, okay, I want to do this, but no, I have to be a lawyer. And finally, I gave in and went with the theater route. And I focused on acting for many years. And then I took the directing class and realized, huh, I kind of like this. I seem to have a knack for it. So after going through that and directing a couple of one-act plays, I had an incredible experience with a new play that it was a North American premiere, actually, of a play called The Master's Boy, which is a gay adaptation of Miss Julie set in London during the 1928 bus strike, general strike.
So by gay, we're not talking happy.
Not happy, okay. Not even a little bit.
We're okay.
But it was just an incredible experience, and I keep going back and forth. Am I an actor, and am I a director? Am I an arts manager? So I wear all of the hats.
Well, don't you think they all complement each other?
They do. But I always miss the one that I'm not doing while I'm doing the other.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know. Right now, sitting here doing this interview, I kind of miss parasailing. Rock climbing. I've never done either. What are you just dying to direct that you haven't got your hands on yet?
Oh, boy. Well, especially sitting here in the new Hazlitt, I would love to direct Murat Saad in this space. I can see prisoners all over the balconies, and it's just such a brilliant space.
In addition
space
to
for
the
it.
Patrons, right?
Yeah, yeah. And since I first stepped foot in this space, that's immediately the show that I saw.
This is a unique, you know, theater. Mm-hmm. It really is, in the sense that it's sort of a two-tiered thrust, mm-hmm. almost. I mean, what would be the technical theater term for this?
Well, it's actually kind of a black box because it's an incredibly versatile space. You can take out the two side seat banks and it becomes a traditional, more proscenium space.
And, you know, for anybody that hasn't seen the theater, you know, black box a lot of time implies very small, intimate space. I mean, it can be that, but really it's huge. And the one thing I love about here, because the ceiling is so high, mm-hmm. I always know that it's going to be a towering set like ceiling to floor. That gets you. That really grabs you.
Well, it just feels like a theater when you walk in. Mm-hmm. It's old and it's wonderful. It's been renovated, but you know you can feel the old the brick around you and sort of the weight of the years of the plays that have been done here.
And a very appropriate place to do a ghost story.
Indeed. Well, I hear that the new Hazlitt is actually haunted.
Okay, tell us about it.
Well, no good theater worth its salt is without its ghost.
I know, they called central casting for one, you know, as soon as they come in.
Right. Well, Connie Brenda Prime Stage's managing director, mm-hmm. She tells a story about taking photos out in the lobby here, and when they came back on her little digital screen, just the faces of people were sort of blurred out. Yeah, so.
I love it.
Yep. Yeah,
I wonder if she can send those to Berg Vivant.
Oh, that would be cool. I'd like see if she has them.
Yeah, we'll include them on the site. Yeah, I love stories like that. Do they have a ghost light here? Because that's, you know, kind of tradition in a lot of theaters.
Well, I think equity requires one anyway, but...
Well, we like to say it's because of the ghosts, not because of equity. That's a lot more interesting, you know. I mean, if we credited equity with everything. But anyway, I kind of get that. Now I'm like looking over my shoulder.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And thinking. And you know, this episode will air in a little bit, but today itself is Halloween.
It is indeed.
It's a good place to be.
The veil is thin tonight.
Oh, pardon me. great. So we got a lot of good things coming up. You know, it was good to get some insight on you as a director there. We learned a lot, and we'll certainly not only be looking to seeing the rest of the run of Turn of the Screw, but these fantastic readings that you'll be directing throughout the rest of the year. So keep us posted on those.
Well,
I'm sure it'll be delightful. So thank you. Thank you, Deck, for joining us. What's Deck short for?
It's short for Dexter.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Well, I have a terribly pretentious name.
Dexter?
Richard Dexter Ingram III.
I love
it. So Deck works.
Yeah.
It's when I need to sound important and, you know, scary. It's good. Deck fits me better.
Deck it is. Excellent. In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and BergVivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk Magazine online. You can find BergVivant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvivant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.